are listening to Beyond Migraine, a six-part podcast series created for people living with migraine in Ireland, brought to you by the Migraine Association of Ireland and Teva Pharmaceuticals Ireland. The views, information or opinions expressed during the Beyond Migraine podcast series are solely those of the individuals involved and do not represent those of the Migraine Association of Ireland or Teva Pharmaceuticals Ireland. The primary purpose of this podcast series is to educate and inform and is not a substitute for professional diagnosis or treatment. This podcast is supported by funding from Teva Pharmaceuticals Ireland. Please note, any comments posted are not being monitored by Teva Pharmaceuticals Ireland. Reporting of suspected adverse reactions is important. It allows continued monitoring of the benefit-risk balance of the medicinal product. To ensure correct adverse event reporting, healthcare professionals and patients are encouraged to use their National Competent Authority reporting scheme. Or you can also report via tevafarm.com/contact us. Today's discussion focuses on the all-important workplace, which may have changed in COVID times, but remains for many the central part of their day and often when their migraines can strike. I'm delighted to be joined by Esther Tompkins, who's a clinical nurse specialist at Beaumont Hospital Dublin. We're also joined by Nicola Halloran, who is a trained chef, author and blogger, and she runs the successful brand, The Wonky Spatula. Nicola suffers from migraine, and she's going to talk to us about how migraine affects her personal and professional life. Nicola, you're very welcome.
Thanks a million for having me.
So I suppose I'll just go straight to you, Nicola, just to get a sense of that, you know, that personal story in terms of how do migraines affect your everyday life and how can it affect your working life?
I think for me, probably it's so hard to know when they're going to come on and like how bad they're going to be. So I might start off a day perfectly fine and then suddenly it just kind of takes over. I think actually working from home has been great because I could just turn the lights off and nobody knows. But yeah, it definitely does affect your work life and your personal life because you never know when they are going to strike. And I think for me, it's definitely related to kind of how busy I am. And some days I might be able to take maybe 10, 15 minutes away from the screen when it first comes on. And that can kind of, you know, alter the severity of it. But there are other days when, you know, I don't have that luxury and I just have to keep going. And I'm definitely more irritable when that happens. But yeah, it's an interesting one. I think everybody suffers differently. No two people are the same, which makes it probably so hard to, you know, kind of manage.
Yeah. And what are you, describe your symptoms to us, because everyone's symptoms are different. What are your symptoms in terms of your own migraines?
It's normally like a very, very kind of sharp pain, and it comes down sort of over my eyes and across like almost sometimes as far down as my nose, depending on how bad it is. And yeah, like sometimes going and sitting in a dark room and just quietness can help it. But sometimes I could be sitting there really wishing I could go to sleep or something, and it just doesn't solve it. But yeah, they're always very sudden, and also unfortunately quite severe. Like I never get sort of a dull migraine.
Right. Okay. Yeah. You're not that lucky. And are they episodic for you, or like you get them occasionally, or have you got a handle on what triggers them for you?
They come and go. So like I could have a couple of good weeks where I don't have one, and then I could have sort of weeks where, you know, it's every day, every second day, that kind of thing. They're definitely probably related to how busy I am. So when I'm really, really stressed, they tend to come on. But there's almost a sweet spot in the too stressed to have time to have one. And then the sort of the mid-level stress where it hits. But then more recently, sometimes they can come out of the blue as well, like when I'm having a day off, which to be honest, that's the worst time it can happen.
Yeah, I can see Esther nodding there about that, because this was one of the questions I was going to ask you, Esther, is that personally, as somebody who gets migraine, exactly like you say, Nicola, I find that you can get through the stressful period and then the weekend hits and that's when you get the migraine. That's quite common, isn't it, Esther?
Yeah, the letdown phase is what we call it. And yeah, the majority of migraineurs would identify with exactly what Nicola has just said. And I think that, you know, during a busy, stressful time, you know, it's important to know that then you become more susceptible to your triggers and to the migraine, and everything starts to be affected, you know. And if you're skipping meals because you're stressed, you're going through a stressful period at work, you know, it is important to keep hydrated and not become dehydrated, as that is a very recognizable trigger. And then managing the stress or that busy period. And, you know, exactly what Nicola said, these are all what we would talk to our patients about. And it's getting those positive coping strategies in place for that busy time. That's important.
Yeah. And stress is so common as a trigger for people, really, isn't it? Is there any understanding of why that is? You hear all these different things about cortisol levels and...
Yeah, well, what we do know is there's definitely activity in the brain, probably started in the hypothalamus. We now understand more about the prodrome. So there are different phases to the migraine attack, starting off with the prodrome. And during that prodrome, even if you want to simplify the cravings of cheese and chocolate, we understand that that's activity already beginning within the hypothalamus in the brain, and a patient's recognizing that that actually is part of their migraine helps them then to better manage the attack, being prepared with their acute treatments, managing then all their trigger factors, because there's not only one trigger factor. Usually it's a combination of trigger factors. So identifying all of these issues is something that we teach our patients in clinic.
And that idea of, maybe to describe it, this idea of a migraine threshold, I found that very useful to understand that, especially in terms of the workplace, in that you may be in a meeting for 2 hours and there's, you know, you haven't had a meal. So there's the gap. That's one thing. Yeah. And then you grab something quick to eat that's not necessarily very healthy. There's another thing. And maybe just explain that to people, that idea of the threshold is that everything's adding up, isn't it, to send you over into a migraine.
It's exactly, Debbie. So it's nearly like it's cumulative. And if, you know, for so many, migraine is 3 times more common in females than males anyway. So let's just simplify even the hormone component here at the time of ovulation, the time of menstruation, and you bring in all the other trigger factors on top of that, you know, and poor sleep hygiene maybe at home, because you find it, like Nicola is saying, when you're very busy and you're on an adrenaline drive and then you're not sleeping, and or you go to bed late and then you're up very early because you're back in. So you have an altered sleep hygiene. So all of these things are really important. And as you say, there is a migraine threshold. Trigger factors are cumulative, but it is important to know that this is all brain activity and that migraine is a brain disorder. And there is neurobiology to this.
And in 2020, TEBA conducted a survey into migraine. And as part of that survey, I think reading through it, it really hit me that concerns about the workplace, concerns about your employer and their perception of the condition, they seem to occur throughout it. 24% of people felt they needed to hide their migraine because of a work-related concern as part of the survey as well. And 41% of people felt that it really impacted their careers. So have you come across those stories, Esther, in the migraine clinic, people coming in a state where they think it's actually affecting their career?
Yeah, I mean, we would regularly write letters of support for our patients. Last week, I wrote a letter for a staff member, actually, within the hospital. She's a care assistant who would find that changing her work roster to night duty and her work environment when she was redeployed to a new area where it was a different manager was becoming a problem, where she was now being put on shifts that were triggering and worsening her migraine attacks. So we would write a letter of support, and nearly always I would put these patients in contact with the Migraine Association of Ireland for support from the organization as well. So yes, this is something that does arise, but I think always trying to get your manager on side, be more supportive, that always helps, because you want to feel confident in your workplace. And I'd say Nicola could maybe talk a little bit about this, that, you know, feeling confident, feeling that you're understood, not misrepresented, understanding that, you know, you will have fluctuations in your productivity because of the migraine condition. And then working with your manager rather than against, if if that makes sense.
Yeah, absolutely. And Nicola, maybe you can talk a little bit about that. Is that, you know, how have you found it in terms of communicating the fact that you suffer from this in the workplace?
So I suppose there's two sides to it from my point of view. So I am a bit of a suffer in silence and just get through it. And I'm kind of, I suppose I can definitely relate to people having that fear of coming forward and sort of, you know, saying that they need time and that kind of thing. So I'm a terrible example of someone who just keeps going until they burn out. But on the other side of things, I am also a manager of quite a large team. So I do actually have somebody else on the team who experiences really bad migraines. And they came to me and sort of were like, look, this happens when it happens. I just need to log off and, you know, get time away from the screen. I was like, you're in safe hands, but not a problem with me. So we sort of have the system in place where if it happens, they just pop me a message. And, you know, I just ask for 4 or 5 bullet points. What do I need to cover, you know, for the couple of hours? And actually, we've kind of even developed a pattern between us of when it happens to them, that it's always sort of coming towards the end of a really, really busy week. And it's always after kind of lunchtime. So it is an interesting one when you talk about the patterns, and it definitely for them does happen at the end of a stressful period, that I can almost as the manager pinpoint, okay, I'm probably going to have a message in the next 2 or 3 days.
Yeah.
But I think it's all about, you know, being understanding. And I think a lot of kind of businesses have realized recently with, you know, changing to working from home and all these kind of things, that flexible working hours are really, really important, whether you are suffering from migraine, whether you're minding kids or minding a loved one. Like, so long as you get the work done, I really don't think that we have to stick to a strict 9 to 5, to be honest. And, you know, there's no point someone sitting in front of a screen suffering in silence and not getting anything done. You know, they're going to be more proactive if they have a couple of hours off, you know, sit in a dark room, have a couple of glasses of water, get away from the screen.
Yeah, and I think that's really important, because when employers think about accommodations, they immediately start panicking in the sense that, is this going to cost loads of money or productivity? And what you're saying there, Nicola, is it's very simple. It's like, just give them the 2 hours off, or let them go home early, and then maybe they'll be back tomorrow. Whereas if they work through this for the rest of the week, they could even tip themselves into chronic migraine, and then you have a really bad problem. So the accommodations you can make are quite simple, aren't they? And Esther, you probably find that when you're out presenting in the workplace, is that maybe some of the employers don't understand really the impact of the condition and how they can help their employees.
Yeah, I mean, and this is where you go back to the old stigma of migraine is just a headache. And migraine for a lot of our patients, especially the difference between episodic and chronic, a lot of our patients then are dealing with, you know, low-grade headache every day. They're dealing with fatigue, they're dealing with brain fog, poor concentration, heightened sensitivity to light, to sound, and in the environment, work environment, this is really important. And Nicola talked about that in one of the opening sentences, that, you know, she can dim the lights now when she wants because she's working from home. And a lot of our patients are saying very similar experiences, that they can then decide if they want to, you know, start a little bit later and work on a little bit later. If they need to take 2 hours off in the middle of the day, then catch up later, they can do this, that they're not sitting in cars driving for an hour and a half commute into an office, or an hour back home sitting in traffic. So all of these things. So COVID has brought some positives, I think, as well as so many negatives. But yeah.
Yeah. And just on that issue of you know, working from home, and obviously there is a kind of a migraine friendly aspect to that. But I also think that it's harder to switch off, isn't it, if you're working from home. And Nicola, if you're running your own business, that's essentially, you know, there's a lot of time you must spend on Instagram. And how do you manage your workload? Are you good at that? Do you say, I'm going to manage it, or I'm going to tip myself into a bad period here?
I'll be completely upfront. I'm pretty bad for kind of just go, 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 get it all done. But I work well in that kind of an environment. I'm a bit of an adrenaline junkie. But I think it's really important to set barriers now that we are working from home, because there's the tendency of, you know, waking up in the morning, turning the laptop on straight away, whereas you would have that morning time commute, in normal circumstances. So you wouldn't be on as soon as you wake up. And then lunchtime for many doesn't exist anymore, because there's also this feeling of, you know, if I'm not green, will people think I'm skiving off if I go yellow, that kind of thing. So I think it's really just about setting barriers. And I think people will respect you a little bit for that as well, by saying, look, no, you know, I started this time, I'm going for my walk, these are the things, because you have to do what's right for you. I think for myself personally, yeah, I'm guilty of it sometimes, of, you know, I'm working to a deadline, I need to get things done. So some of those priorities do go out the window. But then, you know, as soon as the pressure's off, I do like to make sure that I'm getting a bit of time for myself. And for me, like getting exercise in at least kind of 4 or 5 days a week is something that's non-negotiable. And I actually find that it helps quite a lot with migraines. And there's always the tendency when I have one of, oh, I won't go to the gym or I won't do a workout because I don't really feel up to it. But then once you're through it, you feel so much better. I'm not sure, Esther, if you'd have any insight into it, but I actually read recently that skipping can actually help. I don't know what it is. And I tried it, and I don't know whether, you know, like it was all in my head or not, but it definitely worked. And I think as well, like exercise is so good for kind of stress relief, clearing the head, because it's that hour for me anyway of the day where I can't think of anything else. I have to be focused on putting one foot in front of the other. And I think in terms of kind of creating a work-life balance, having those kind of rhythms and patterns and things that you do on a regular basis for you is so important.
Yeah, and I agree, Nicola. And that whole thing about exercise and yoga and all of that, you know, that self-management plan. But it can be hard, though, Esther, if for people who are in a kind of a chronic pain cycle, and we have to be very mindful of that, that if you're in a very bad place, you know, just getting up and putting one foot in front of the other can be hard for people if you have a migraine every day. Isn't that the case? Do you have any advice, Esther, for people in terms of taking those first steps?
Well, yeah, there are two different approaches that we would take at the clinic. And one absolutely would be exactly like what Nicola is suggesting, a 20-minute walk every day. It's a very positive natural release of serotonin in the brain. So it's which is a natural analgesic as such. And, you know, it's very positive, and that's why people have very positive experience with just regular mild exercise. But for many, we have the opposite, where it can become a real challenge for patients to exercise. And, you know, many do identify with stressful exercise. So when they push themselves, you know, for playing a match, or also, you know, attending the gym, for instance, it can really trigger and worsen migraine for some. So I guess there's a balance of recognizing what works for you. And we would advise regular exercise, yoga, meditation, mindfulness, self-care, you know, minding your mental health, as well as recognizing all the other simple things that you can do, keeping yourself hydrated, eating regularly, don't skip meals, good sleep hygiene. All of these things are really important in a balanced, structured approach to managing migraine.
And so, Nicola, what's in your kind of exercises in your self-management, I suppose, plan for your migraines? Is there anything else that you find particularly useful?
Yeah, well, exercise-wise, I do a lot of weightlifting and kind of HIIT stuff. I also do boxing, which is really, really good after a stressful day.
Stress relief.
Yeah, it's funny. I started boxing on one of the most stressful days of my entire career, and I think I just fell in love with it straight away. So.
I thought you were going to say it knocked the person out.
No, it's no contact. I have to be very conscious of, you know, maintaining my good looks.
And obviously, as a chef, then, you know, food must be very important. I think sometimes we get hung up on particular types of food as migraine people, but it's really just a healthy diet, isn't it, Nicola?
Yeah, definitely. And I think above anything, I've kind of explored all avenues when it comes to foods. I've, as a teenager, like I tried every diet under the sun just to say that I'd done it. And then obviously, like in later life, kind of found a very much a balanced and flexible approach to food as well. Because, you know, It's really obviously important to eat healthy, but you don't want to be missing out on things because you're kind of shoehorning yourself into a certain way. So for me, it's definitely, you know, making sure that you have fully balanced meals and that you allow yourself treats, you know, when social occasions arise and when you want it, which is super important.
Yeah. And also, you know, try and figure out what's triggering for you as well in terms of, you know, diet, which is really important. And I know that years ago, that one of the apps monitored people in terms of caffeine. And for some people, caffeine seems to be a preventative. Isn't that the case? Esther, have you come across that?
Yeah. And patients say that. And, you know, absolutely, it's the caffeine, that's for sure, in the tea and the coffee. So, and like what you're saying, for some, it's a trigger. For others, it's actually it actually helps to manage. So it's about recognizing your own limitations and your own triggers and trying to manage them, because everyone is different.
Yeah. Now, I just wanted to, Nicola mentioned it at the beginning, lighting and the fact that she has to turn off the lights when she gets a migraine attack. And there's obviously photosensitivity for people. Not always just when they get the attack, it can be in the time leading up to it. And for me, myself, it's the day after as well. And I know from my time in working with the Migraine Association is the lighting seemed to be a major issue for people in workplaces. We would have had people who would call in, maybe working in a very white factory floor, and it's triggering for their migraine. A lot of the larger companies now are on an automatic system, so the blinds all come up at the same time in Facebook and Google. And you can't pull down the blinds yourself in your own location. So that can be problematic for people. Is there anything they can do about that, Esther, in terms of lighting, special lenses or anything that can help with that?
Yeah, this does come up. And so many of our migraineurs are photosensitive and they have phonophobia as well. So it's light and noise tend to be the most common environmental issues for people at work. Also, people wearing strong perfume, actually, that can be a real problem for a lot of our patients. And I think probably talking and to your manager, talking to your colleagues, explaining a little bit about the condition so that they can recognize, you know, if you're more susceptible to a migraine at the time, maybe to be mindful of this fact. And many people have said that they've addressed it with colleagues and, you know, people have stopped wearing the perfume coming into work and have actually been really supportive. And that, you know, sometimes it's just a matter of actually just explaining and people understanding then, because they recognize that what migraine actually is, and dispelling this myth that migraine is just a headache.
Yeah. And you can also ask the Migraine Association to come to your workplace, well, obviously not at the moment, but they'll come and do a presentation to your employer. That's a kind of a good sort of neutral way, isn't it? To get people to understand. You can encourage people to attend the event and to find out more. And I've been at those events where colleagues and employers are like, oh, I didn't realize this. I didn't realize it affected you that bad. So that's an idea in terms of, you know, highlighting the issue at work as well.
Absolutely. And I think that that's something that, you know, so many migraineurs have hidden the disability that can be associated with it. And they prefer to just be there and continue on with their work, just so as not to have to say, I have to take another day off because of migraine. And this is commonly comes up at clinic. So migraineurs tend to be high achievers, Nicola, type A personality. And they actually would prefer to, even though their productivity may be reduced, they would prefer to be there. It's called presenteeism, I think, rather than anything else. And, you know, that's why if you can have supportive colleagues and people who have your back at work, that when they know you have a bad day, maybe build up a little bit of a credit bank with them so that, you know, then if they need to take a day off for a different reason, you'll be there and have their back. So I think that that's what I encourage patients to do. There's no cure for migraine, so you've got to learn how to manage it.
Absolutely. And I think that idea of which Nicola probably is doing with her colleague in work is to find that kind of champion or support network so that when you're in the middle of an attack, that you can say to, you know, your colleague and say, look, you know, I have to go home, and they can explain it to other people. I've kind of found that useful in the workplace as well. And Nicola, you've obviously had to hide it yourself. So I know that you say that you just kind of muddle through, but you know, I know that you're saying that that's because that's your kind of personality, but have you felt in situations where you felt that you couldn't really be honest about it?
I wouldn't say like that, you know, there isn't the opportunity for me to maybe, you know, take a bit of time from the laptop and kind of be honest about it. I suppose it probably comes back to what Esther said on being a high achiever and always kind of having this feeling of, you know, I've got to get this done and, you know, I just don't want to let the side down. Whereas it's really funny when I then look at it in the reverse. If someone comes to me with a migraine, I'm like, take your time and go, you know, do whatever. So yeah, it's probably just a case of me maybe having double standards and the fear of kind of, you know, giving into it in a way. But I do actually tend to be quite like lucky in the times of the day that they mainly strike. Like it'll kick off at about 3 or 4 and kind of, you know, peak at around 6, so I can step away and manage it and then, you know, just get up early the next morning and crack into things again. So I'd say it's probably just more so I'm lucky on when it strikes and what I can do to kind of mask it, get out of the situation and then come back in the following day. But it's not always the case, and I have been very transparent 1 or 2 times when I've had a particularly bad one. And I suppose it's harder maybe at the moment if you are on a call and you suddenly have to turn your camera off because you can't look at the screen.
So in terms of that stigma and stigma in the workplace, it can be even more kind of pressurized and stressful for men because it's often seen as a female condition. And I know from my time in the Migraine Association, we would often get a lot of men at our events or on the information and support line. And they would say, you know, my colleagues in work just wouldn't believe me if I said I had a migraine. Do you still think there still is more of a stigma around men and migraine, Esther?
Certainly, we're seeing a lot more men attending the migraine service now in Beaumont. And I think that maybe the campaign of the Migraine Association for so many years of profiling the condition for public awareness has really helped. And I think the understanding that migraine is very familial and that it tends to run in families. So this is something that I explain in the first 2 minutes of the consultation. I ask about the familial link. Did your mother suffer with migraine? Did your father suffer with migraine? What about your grandparents? And suddenly the men recognize, wow, this actually is my biology. This is, you know, it's in my brain. And recognizing that is huge for so many of our male attendees at the clinic. So yeah, I think that, you know, it's changing and it's changing for the better. And I think that, yeah, more and more men now are coming out and saying, you know, this was my migraine. I have my 16-year-old that, you know, has migraine and he's a big rugby player. And if he goes into school and skips his meals, he'll get his migraine. And he's now able to say to his mates, listen, I've got a migraine. I've got to go home. And they get it and they understand. And I think that that's really important.
Yeah, and elsewhere in the series, we speak to Tony Cascarino as well. And it's really important that those male kind of role models come out and speak about the impact. And, you know, he spoke about the fact of how it can have a real impact on his career, you know, throughout his career and his value as a footballer. So there's lots of additional pressures there. But it's good to hear that that's actually changing, though, as well. So I suppose we've spoken about the fact that these are all the challenges that people face in the workplace. So what can you do if you were somebody that suffers from migraine and you're working full time? You know, Esther, what should people have in their kind of arsenal of their self-management and support kit?
Yeah, I guess that's something that we teach patients again very early on. And we've talked a lot in this podcast about managing strategies and looking at trigger factors and identifying all the self-help things that you can do to better manage it yourself. But one of the really important coping strategies is recognizing your symptoms so that you have the acute treatments ready. And early intervention with these acute treatments is really important. So this is really important to understand your symptoms, understanding the different phases of a migraine attack, recognizing it, and understanding when to treat and to treat early with the acute treatment cocktail.
Yeah, so to hit it hard and to hit it quick. And Nicola, do you have any advice for people in terms of, you know, managing their migraines in the workplace?
I think it's not to be like me and to be very transparent with people who you are working with, and just, you know, bring them on the journey with you and explain what happens, how you treat it yourself, and how they can help you in order to kind of work through it and work around it. It's really, really important that you get in there early, and when you do even start to feel a niggle, that you sort of drop a message and it's like, hey, look, this is happening. I might need to take a little bit of time this afternoon or later today, just flagging in advance. So then they even know it's coming down the line, and they can be conscious of, you know, if they have a couple of tasks that they're going to send your way, maybe they might hold off. And then equally, you can plan to sort of hand over anything that can't wait a couple of hours or a day or so.
Yeah, absolutely. And what about employers? Because there might be employers who are listening in, and there's managers. I'll ask the same question to both of you as well. To you first, Esther, what advice would you give to employers in terms of what accommodations they can have in the workplace for people with migraine?
I think that recognizing that migraine can be a very disabling condition, and giving that support to employees that they feel understood. And as I said earlier, then they feel more confident within the workplace, that they feel supported. And that's really, I think, one of the most important points. And, you know, sometimes you have to be able to leave work behind as well and say, now enough is enough. And, you know, you need to mind yourself and look after your well-being, and, you know, address these issues as they arise. And you said right at the very beginning, there is a difference between episodic migraine, somebody who's having maybe two attacks a year, to those that are having two attacks a week, every week, and those that are having daily symptoms. So there is a very broad scope of migraine patients out there. And, you know, recognizing that and understanding that is important too.
Yeah. And Nicola, if you were talking to an employer and they were thinking of setting up, say, a quiet room, which is a great idea, I think, for somebody with migraine, what would you advise them to have in that quiet room?
I definitely, if possible, have it completely soundproof so that when you go in, it's just silence straight away. I'd actually love one of those in my house. And to have the option of, you know, blackout blinds, and also maybe a dimming switch on the light itself, so that if they do want to have a bit of light, it's not kind of all or nothing. And definitely you want to have somewhere that's well ventilated. You don't want to get too hot or equally too cold, just like a nice warm when it needs to be, or cold when it needs to be, environment. And if anyone's listening, I wouldn't say no to a beanbag either.
Or a few ice packs as well. One of the things I was thinking about was snacks in the workplace as well. Are there any kind of healthy snacks you've come across, Nicola, that you would have in your kind of arsenal?
Yeah, in our office, actually, we have a communal fruit bowl, which I think is really great. And it means people can just grab something when they're on the go, and you won't kind of go without. And then alongside that, I'm a big fan of energy balls. I make a batch of them once a week. Really simple, kind of dates, nuts, a couple of different flavors depending on my mood. And it's something that I kind of would reach for midway through the afternoon, little pick me up to keep you going. And it means that, you know, you're having something that's natural ingredients, and you're not going to like kind of spike your blood sugar with a sugary bar or something along those lines. And it kind of tides you over between those long gaps. So for me, that's definitely one of my go-tos.
Yeah, that's a great idea. And you have what's your Instagram channel?
The Wonky Spatula. So you'll actually find loads of different energy balls there. I'm not lying when I say that I have at least one every day.
No, but it's good for people to know that it's somebody who suffers from migraine, and they have a channel like that they might find useful recipes on it as well, which is great.
Exactly. And when you are on the go as well, it's all about being mindful, if you can, of, you know, alternatives, whether it is a packet of nuts or, you know, kind of store-bought energy balls and things like that. So there's always kind of healthy alternatives out there.
Yeah. And it can be very boring in the sense that everybody is kind of, you know, jumping into the crisps and stuff at lunchtime and you just can't, you know, you can't have them. But again, that's just part of the acceptance of the condition. You just have to go about it a different way. And it means we're probably healthier, doesn't it, Nicola?
Exactly.
Now, just to finish up, it'd be remiss of me not to say that we're talking about lovely managers like you, Nicola, who has migraine and is lovely. But that's not always the case in terms of people with migraine in the workplace. Not all employers and managers are understanding of people if they've missed 20 days, if they're having to leave work early. Esther, do you have any advice on that?
I think that if you start to run into problems at work, look for supports with your GP. With, you know, the likes of the specialist clinics, look to the Migraine Association and get advice and support and direction from them.
You've been listening to Beyond Migraine, a 6-part podcast series created for people living with migraine in Ireland and brought to you by the Migraine Association of Ireland and Teva Pharmaceuticals Ireland.